We're delighted to be here today to introduce the final podcast in our Resilience series. These are part of our Better Together Leadership series for 2020. In the three podcasts, we have been exploring how we define and understand resilience, how resilience can impact performance, and how we can develop resilient leadership teams in the age of disruption. I'm Jo Adrus. I lead our UK and I leadership practice at EY. And I'm joined for this resilience series by Mavis Dwar. Mavis is a cognitive behavioral psychotherapist with experience in mental health and education. And Mavis works in our EY talent team. Today, we're going to talk about the characteristics of people we regard as resilient. And we're also going to look into how we can develop resilient leadership teams. Mavis, could you start by helping us understand a little bit about the characteristics of people we see and identify and say, yes, those are the characteristics that mean those people have got high levels of resilience? The people that we feel are more likely to look at a particular scenario and see it as an opportunity, rather than perhaps looking at the same scenario and seeing it as something much more negative.
Sure, yes. Well, resilience research has kind of gone through three waves. And in the first wave of research, resilience was seen as a trait or factor that was inherent in individuals. So it was seen as a personality trait, quite fixed. So you either had resilience or you didn't. And then there was a second wave of research which looked at the process of resilience, what it actually involved. And they identified that resilience was actually a set of skills and a mindset. And then there was a third wave of research that started saying that actually resilience is something that isn't necessarily a personality trait. It's actually skills that people can learn, harness and develop. So these characteristics of resilient people is something that we can all aspire to or may already have. And I would say there's sort of three key ones. There are quite a few, but these are sort of three key ones that I think stand out for me. So I think being healthily resilient involves being able to accept the reality of a situation and embracing the change. Because if we resist the reality of the situation, it becomes very difficult to keep going and dealing with it. It can actually set up problems later on. So accepting the situation enables us to emotionally come to terms with it so that we can make a conscious decision to actually be intentionally resilient. I think the second characteristic is people who have aspirations for the future and are committed to achieving them with a sense of purpose. And that comes back to the whole why piece. So there was a psychiatrist, Viktor Frankl, who wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And he had been in the concentration camps back in the Second World War. And he observed the ways in which people dealt with those really traumatic, challenging circumstances. And what I found out was that people who had a reason why, so people who had a reason to keep going, were more likely to find strategies to help them deal with even the most intolerable circumstances. So having a sense of why, a sense of purpose, is quite critical in helping people to have the kind of mindset that enabled them to face challenges and keep going in the face of barriers that they may face during the challenges. And then finally, the last bit is around connecting with other people who can support you. So as I said, resilience is a bit like a car. You know, you've got to do quite a few things at the same time, keep looking forward, draw on the best of the past, but be mindful about the present and deal with what's happening in the here and now. But sometimes your car may not always help you get to the destination. It may break down for whatever reason. Now, if you can't fix it yourself, you're stuck. And resilience is a bit like that. Sometimes we're not always able to keep going by ourselves. So being able to draw on the resources of other people, the support of other people, is a really critical skill to be able to stay and remain resilient.
And that piece, Mavis, about being connected to others who can support you and being able to draw on that support from others. I think that leads me into my next question, really, which is, what does resilience mean when we look at it more from an organizational perspective versus the individual perspective that you've just been talking about there. So it'd be great if you could share some thoughts and views with us about the role of resilience for organizations.
The characteristics of resilient organizations look very much the same as the characteristics for individuals. However, organizations need to do two things at the same time in order to stay resilient. One is that they need to be able to successfully innovate and adapt to changes in their market and harness the best of the technology available, whilst at the same time being able to deliver excellent performance against their current strategic goals. So in order to do this, they probably need to have about four key qualities. One up front is their culture. Their culture needs to embrace diversity, inclusion, and innovation. Why? Well, that's because having a diverse culture, celebrating diversity, having diverse thinking provides a greater pool of resilient strategies. At any given challenge, there isn't one answer. And often by being able to get the best out of a diverse range means you're able to respond to challenges in a more effective way. And what we know, despite what people think, organisms that survive are not the fittest. They're the ones that are most able to adapt to their environment. So that ability to adapt really comes from having a culture of diversity and embraces innovation. Then the second characteristic is the structure of the organization. Organizations which are quite hierarchical and bureaucratic tend to run on tradition. And the problem with tradition is that it can be a hindrance to innovation, to change. So what we would like is for organizations to have agile structures and processes that enable them to adapt quickly and adapt in a creative, timely, and effective way. But just as you've got that agile structure, the third feature is really having a type of leadership which encourages people to be engaged and empowered. And largely, that's about having a coaching style of leadership. Because what you're doing there is that you are fostering resilience in others. You're asking others to think about what they can do, to think about their strengths, and encouraging them to use that in a proactive way to empower themselves and the people around them. That means they'll be more likely to come forward with new ideas, new options that can help address challenges. So just as with individuals, the last feature is about the ecosystem relationships. We're not an island. So organizations that have a network of successful relationships with other organizations, what that means is that they can draw on them when needed. Those organizations may have the expertise, the technology that are required to meet the current challenges more than the parent organization. So ecosystem relationships are also a critical factor in resilient organizations.
And Mavis, all of the points that you're covering there, they all sound to me, they sound very positive, they sound very clear, all sounds sort of like the sorts of things we could apply ourselves to and we can wrap our heads around. I think one of the things I was really keen to ask you and understand was, are there any situations where we actually find resilience can be unhealthy, or I suppose potentially too much resilience can turn into something that's actually unhealthy for individuals or for organizations?
Yes, I think that's such an important point about unhealthy resilience, only because I think we do celebrate resilience, and of course we should. It's important to be able to deal with challenges because life can be challenging. However, there is something called being too resilient. And that can be in one of two ways. One is having the idea that you're a hero that's going to save everybody and having that single hero complex. And then there's something about being too persistent in achieving goals. So as said, in our society, we celebrate people who seem to achieve their goals no matter what the cost, and it's seen as a positive sign. But sometimes it can actually be unhealthy. There is a wisdom about knowing when to stop and when to continue. And that's because resilience requires energy. We need energy from our motivation, and that needs to be replenished over time. If we keep overcommitting to keeping going because we want to be a hero, or because we are so fixated on a goal that we must achieve at all costs, it will deplete energy over time, and this can lead to burnout. And burnout is about overcommitting ourselves to something to such an extent that we have no energy left. What that can also do is make us feel more distance from our work. So it actually has the negative consequence of making us feel disengaged from our work. And also it can reduce our efficiency. So where I've seen this quite commonly has been when I've worked in the health profession. And often people who've gone into health are driven by some very strong values, and one of which is around healing. The challenge around healing is that not everybody can be healed for any number of reasons. And if that can be a difficult reality to accept, often clinicians can be persisting on trying to treat somebody or trying to find a solution when actually it may not be possible on that occasion. That attitude over time can lead to vicarious trauma. Vicarious trauma is basically when you haven't experienced a traumatic incident yourself, but you are constantly witnessing it through others. So it is as though you have actually been traumatized. It can also lead to compassion fatigue. So compassion fatigue is basically the idea of running out of caring, stopping being able to care anymore. And of course, we want our clinicians to want to give us the best possible care, but we don't want it to be at the cost of themselves. And that can be quite challenging in the current environment.
That's really helpful to understand that, Mavis, because I think there's always that risk that people seek to become more resilient, that they sort of don't know quite where to stop and where to sort of pause and make sure that they're taking care of themselves. So it's great to get a bit of a better understanding of when it can be a bit too much. So thank you for that. I'm feeling that we've covered a lot in all of this with regards to the attributes of resilience, the need for resilience. I think perhaps just as a final point, it would be lovely to hear from you in terms of where would you recommend leadership teams focus? Really so that I guess they can improve their ability to develop not only their individual resilience, but their collective resilience as a team. It'd be great to hear from you as to where you'd recommend they focus.
I think leadership teams and teams in general can start becoming resilient by looking at themselves as individuals, knowing their strengths, understanding their past history of resilience, you know, what are the challenges they face personally and professionally that they've managed to overcome, and being able to articulate for themselves what were the strategies that helped them to overcome them. I think the next step after that is being able to pull together all those stories of resilience into a collective narrative for the team, that this is our shared resilience, our shared understanding of resilience. The idea being that it becomes a value and a set of ideas and principles by which they can all align and which they can all apply when reacting to and dealing with the challenges they face. It gives them a shared language. And then I think finally, it's about trying to foster resilience in others through modeling that resilience, but also actively using that coaching style of leadership to ask people questions to help them tap into their own existing resilience.
Mavis, thanks again for joining me for this final podcast about resilience. It's been wonderful understanding that we can all develop the characteristics of resilience and how being able to adapt is critical to our ability to develop our own resilience. It's been so helpful hearing about when you can overdo resilience and where leadership teams can focus to develop collective resilience. And as this is the last of the three podcasts, I just want to say, Mavis, a huge thank you for all of your insights throughout the full series. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jo. It's been lovely talking with you today. It's been great. Thank you.
And I'll just mention as well, Mavis, that there's actually a blog to accompany this podcast. And for anyone who's interested in reading that, they can find it in both my LinkedIn posts and your LinkedIn posts. They'll certainly find it there. And that blog is actually part of our Better Together leadership series, which we're working on throughout the course of 2020. So this podcast and the blogs are part of a series. Later in the year, we're going to be bringing people more insight around how the benefits of focusing on strengths, the importance of trust, the pros and cons of leaders working flexibly, the role of the gig economy in leadership teams. We'll be coming back to the importance of having that clearly defined purpose. And we will be also focusing on the sort of rising need for a focus on sustainable leadership and how important that is for teams. So there's going to be a lot for people to tap into and enjoy over the course of 2020. So we hope you enjoyed this particular podcast, and we certainly hope to hear from all of you again soon. Thank you so much.